Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. I'm your host, Ron Edwards, coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul on this beautiful Tuesday evening here in the upper Midwest, the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Too bad it is not as favorable in the insane asylum, which is called the White House in Washington, D.C. And I tell you, it's getting bad, my friend. But we want to take a look at a number of things tonight, and we want to continue to keep an eye on the international scene. North Korea, Iran, even China, if you will, as misstep after misstep is being made by the Trump administration. You know, he brought in all these generals, which everyone thought would provide a level of, first of all, both reflection, understanding, competency, and et cetera, to help guide this man, if you will, Donald Trump. I call him the Commissar of the West. Of course, the Commissar of the East is his quote-unquote handler, Vladimir Putin, who has to be enjoying every second of what is happening and the level of confusion in the United States of America, if you will. And so we'll be taking a look at that. But first of all, to share with you and our listening audience around the world and here in the United States, and the upper Midwest and the Twin Cities, the selection to fill out the remaining 18 months of former Chief Janae Harto, who was clearly an outstanding chief and did a lot to bring this department into the 21st century. We were sorry to see her go. We thought that it was an error. It's premature by the current mayor and her advisors, but they did what they did. But as an outgrowth of that, for the first time in its history, the city of Minneapolis and the Minneapolis Police Department has an African-American as chief of police. This is something as younger African-Americans way back in the 1960s, we used to talk about, we used to think about, and in fact, we fought for it, if you will, in the organizations that I was affiliated with, the City Civil Rights Commission, president of the, and head of the, president of the board of the Urban League, member of the NAACP, and other organizations. This was always on the front burner. We did accomplish the appointment of a very qualified African-American almost a decade ago as chief of the fire department, who brought significant knowledge, understanding, and continued guidance to the Minneapolis Fire Department. And so our congratulations go out to Chief Arredondo, a son of the city of Minneapolis, if you will, born and raised in Minneapolis, grew up on the south side, attended Roosevelt High School in South Minneapolis, just an excellent choice. A man who is respected in many, many, many quarters, if you will. And we look forward to an even more permanent, quote-unquote, appointment over the next number of years as chief of the Minneapolis Police Department. If there's a person that can get things straightened out, and this is a difficult time for our city and for our police department after the tragic shooting of a Australian national, Justine Diamond, if you will, in an alley just outside of her home in South Minneapolis. We think that the chief of the department, Arredondo, is handling the politics of what is going on. Not everyone, as we said on last week's program, not everyone really enthusiastic about him being the chief, but the political chemistry right now in our city is such that people are holding back as it pertains to elected officials. Now, there's a whole crew of individuals that are complaining and indicating that Chief Arredondo is not black enough, he's not committed enough, he's been here. He has, by the way, been a member of the department for 28 years, joining the force in 1989. There's an interesting crew of individuals who are talking in terms that he cannot get the job done, he's been here too long, and et cetera. A lot of these folks are the same folks that would make that same statement about the white CEO at the companies that they work for. You know what I mean? Would never make a statement that Massa, that boss, has been there too long, if you will, as head of the corporation, be it General Mills or Cargill or the PD company, in a number of other organizations. Some of these folks that I see making these statements would never put their job on the line. By the way, with regards to job on the line, one of the things that a number of folks are staying away from and giving credit to both the tenaciousness and the commitment to equality and justice and et cetera in the Mass Department is the fact that a decade ago almost, the now Chief Arredondo sued his employer, the Minneapolis Police Department, and the city of Minneapolis. He and four other African-American officers, who in fact I coined them as the Mill City Five, if you will. Some of those members are still with the department. And led by Chief Arredondo, have ascended to positions of importance, Commander Charles Adams, and Sergeant Dennis Hamilton, if you will, joining our Chief Arredondo as continuing to stand their post, if you will, and continuing to do everything that they can to make this a better department. And we are happy to see that. Oh, I did forget one other officer, if you will, who continued a significant role, and that was Officer Harris, if you will, a lieutenant at that time. But is Chief Arredondo that we look towards as a man that can complete the task, if you will, get the job done, if you will. He knows and understands community policing, if you will. He understands the importance of relationships. He has an excellent personality, if you will, and as we said, born and raised within the city of Minneapolis and within the African-American community. And so we want to wish him the very best, if you will. Also, we must take this opportunity this evening to send our condolences and prayers to the membership, if you will, of Minnehaha Academy, a very prestigious religious institution here in our beloved city, has been here for over 127. A terrible accident at about 10:30 a.m. Central Daylight Savings Time in the main building of Minnehaha Academy, a gas explosion, if you will. One is known dead. There is another individual in critical condition, and they are still searching for a Mr. Carlson. Many of us feel has expired, if you will. But again, our prayers go out to the Minnehaha Academy community and family, if you will, in this a terrible and sad time for that institution, and again for the Minnehaha Academy family, a great institution located in the southeastern portion of our city. If you will, in fact, our former mayor, Sharon Sells Belton, lives not too far from the Minnehaha Academy. It sits on two sites, the upper campus, As we are speaking, they are probably completing a memorial service along the parkway there in close proximity to the upper and lower campuses, if you will, a memorial service to those that were injured, those that have lost their life in a separate terrible tragedy, if you will. Obviously, something happened. Gas escaped. We all are very lucky as a city. In fact, it was just yesterday that this city recognized the 10th anniversary of the collapse of the 35W bridge into the Mississippi River. 13 people lost their lives. 140-some individuals were injured. I well remember that catastrophe. I had received a phone call. Was about 5 minutes away, rushed to the bridge to see if I could be of any help. It was a devastating scene. I'll never forget it. And that bridge was a bridge that I oftentimes came across on my way back from the city of St. Paul and bowling in a league over there. And I just kind of said quiet prayer as I looked at that bridge that had collapsed, and I looked at that school bus with 60 children on it, which a very courageous driver who was interviewed last night put and commitment by holding that steering wheel, keeping her foot on that brake, and allowing those children, in which two of those children on that little school bus were hers, if you will, that entire family could have been lost if it had gone wrong. And so just last night, our new stations and et cetera were reviewing, if you will, and reflecting on that tragedy a decade ago. And this 10:30 this morning, the explosion takes place. So we would be remiss if we did not take the opportunity on this program to express again our prayers to the Minnehaha community and our continued prayers to those who survived a decade ago the collapse of the 35W bridge over the Mississippi River on the edge of downtown Minneapolis, if you will. It'll be something that will never be forgotten. Well, as we said at the top of this program, we watch closely the insane asylum called the White House, if you will. The inmates within, and particularly the lead, quote-unquote, person, President Donald Trump, who seems to have a serious confusion in his mind, if you will, about that this is a nation that he is presiding over, God help us, and not a little small American corporation, you know. And he continuously talks about how great and big his corporation is. There are many other American corporations that are just as large and have greater assets, financial assets, et cetera, than the quote-unquote Trump. Like to call it, particularly in light of how many times Donald Trump and Trump has gone into bankruptcy. You know, one thing about the president, he knows how to use the law. He may not respect it for his purposes, if you will, i.e. His son-in-law, i.e. his son, Donald Jr., i.e. his first national security director, the idiot that he had for 11 days as his communications director, the smook, if you will, tough-talking New Yorker who must have thought he was in a private club somewhere with, you know, it was he was and could talk in the manner that he did. Clearly, General Kelly, four-star general of the United States Marines, now the chief of staff to Donald Trump. Maybe a four-star general can get him under control. He needs to be under control because there are too many issues internationally and domestic that is on the horizon to have, quote-unquote, a idiot, if you will, a man ill-motivated to be, quote-unquote, the 45th president of the United States of America. And this is serious, my friends. This is just not for the purpose of a program, if you will, or waxing, rapping, philosophizing, or et cetera. These are very, very dangerous programs which will air here on Sunday on the Minneapolis Television Network. We are now in our 27th year there. We indicated we could not, as a single person, We cannot speak, quote unquote, for anybody else. We can speak to everybody, if you will. If they choose to listen, thank you. If they choose not to, we understand. But the fact of the matter is that we are in a situation, particularly on the Korean Peninsula, if you will, in which we are facing an opposition force that is not afraid, quote unquote, of the United States of America. They are not afraid of white Christians, if you will. They recognize how they, the little yellow man, as they are oftentimes referred to, as well as the Chinese and the Japanese and the Filipinos and the Vietnamese and the Cambodians and et cetera, and et cetera, and et cetera. But they are not terrified. People tend to forget that within the confines of the history is a legacy which indicated in the early 1950s, in fact, starting in 1950, that the North Koreans and then later, supported by their allies across the Yalu River, the Chinese, fought the United States and the United Nations forces at that particular time to a standstill. That's the reason that we have the demilitarized zone, the DMZ. That is also the reason why all that you have is an armistice, if you will. There has never been a peace treaty. And, of course, that is one of the things that experts on North Korea maintain, that the North Koreans have always wanted, that they have wanted, quote-unquote, a ultimately permanent peace, if you will, so that there may be peaceful coexistence on the Korean Peninsula. There have been many forces in the West which have not wanted this, and yet the North Koreans have shown an amazing staying power. Amazing staying power, if you will, with regards to maintaining, number one, their sovereignty, if you will. Number two, the world with respect to their industrial ability, their technology, and their ability to do what it is that was set forward on their behalf and for them by the previous leaders of North Korea, if you will. We indicated on our television program last night, taping for broadcasting here on Sunday, as we have done for the last 27 years, and we find it amazing, and I'd like for those of you that are a part of our listening group to give some real strong thought to this, because we're talking about the future of humanity, if you will. You're talking about the future of your children and your grandchildren and their grandchildren, if you will. If we will have a planet that will be worthy of us being able to inhabit it, if you will. And I'm just bothered by this arrogance, this Western arrogance, if you will, that indicates that, you know, that 20 million little yellow people, quote-unquote, can be destroyed if that's what it comes to, and that in some way or another the United States of America is not going to be touched. Well, that went up in smoke this past Friday. There was an early indication of a week or so before that North Koreans have been working tenaciously. They are very patient, as is the, quote-unquote, reputation of the Orient, if you will, and of the Oriental, if you will. That is a very patient place with very patient people, be they Chinese or Vietnamese or Koreans, Japanese for that matter. And it is quite obvious that the North Koreans have set in place a mission for the survival of their nation, if you will, for the survival of their philosophy and their history and et cetera. And sometimes in this country of the United States of America, with regards to our sense of white privilege, if you will, we tend to dismiss based on color, far too often based on color, sometimes based on religion, if you will. And by the way, that was shown today in the announcements by the president, two very significant announcements, the significant changing of immigration laws. And at long last, the Donald has shown his hand, a beginning of the rollback of affirmative action and civil rights in the United States of America. Yes, for those in our international listening audience, that is what is on the agenda. We would suggest that you watch very closely the cable networks, if you will. But for those of you that have shortwave radios and et cetera, as I do, listen very closely to some of the broadcasts coming out of the United States of America. I would hope that the Congressional Black Caucus will take grave exception. In fact, I would encourage the Black Caucus, using the tool of filibuster, if you will, fanning any kind of piece of legislation that will come up upon their return from the holidays, if you will, to conduct one of the longest filibusters in the history of the Congress of the United States, if you will. We must say to Donald Trump and the so-called ultra-right, if you will, that enough is enough, but also we, the sons and daughters of the African who died by the millions being brought here and died by the millions, quote-unquote, being murdered, if you will, being abused, if you will, being kept in bondage and slavery, and then facing the hardships of segregation, and accepted that enough is enough, and we will not allow Donald Trump and his right-wing extremists to bring about a situation in which white folks will start being comfortable with talking in terms of return to the days of segregation and slavery. Oh, yes, my friends, I know there's some of you out there that would say that that's ridiculous, that's ignorant, as Mr. Miller said today to Mr. Acosta in the press room at the White House when they were talking about the new immigration law. People with power out of control. I side with Mr. A series of immigration laws that will basically block people of color but will encourage, quote-unquote, their Eastern European cousins, if you will, to come into the United States and be given preferential treatment. In the key, oh, we haven't forgot Korea. We're coming back to Korea. Don't worry about it. And find themselves up against, quote-unquote, a series of reforms under Jeff Sessions, a man who is desperately trying to get back in the graces of his big daddy, if you will. These announcements calculated to take your attention away from the Russian problem, if you will, and now to take your attention away from the collapse and failure of the health care legislation, if you will. There is no, quote-unquote, significant legislation dealing with infrastructure, tax reform, or such things as that. This is a man that has not kept his promise to the American people, even though he lost the popular vote by over 3 million votes, if you will. But he won the Electoral College. And by the way, as we said on last week's program, is that we really, as Americans, have no guarantee whatsoever that there was not tampering with the electoral vote by the shifting of significant votes in the states of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. You know, it was highly suspicious in the first place when those three states came in after states like Alaska and Hawaii, if you will, and the big state of California, if you will, and the West, and et cetera. It was always, particularly in light of the fact that in mid-February of this year in our beloved America, a report was finally revealed that the Russians had hacked into the operational facilities and the plans, schematics, and et cetera, of the largest manufacturer in the United States of voting machines. And I find it interesting today as we follow up on President Trump issuing sanctions once again. Now he sanctioned Venezuela, he sanctioned Russia, he sanctioned Iran, he sanctioned North Korea. And yet those regimes continue to operate, to go about business, if you will. Kind of wonder how many friends does the United States of America really have in the big world arena. Something you need to think about. Now, back to Korea. This is a dangerous situation that we are confronted with as the American Republic, if you will. The North Koreans are not going to bend. And when a nation starts talking about regime change, which is as long as I can remember, going all the way back to Iran, if you will, that is the code word for assassination, regime change, and et cetera. Now, the North Koreans have already indicated that if that's the kind of game the United States wants to play, everybody can play tit for tat. For those of us that followed that period of the so-called Cold War, the Iron Curtain, and et cetera, we are aware, as historians, if you will, that both sides, the East and the West, were involved in assassinations and et cetera. And it is a fine art, if you will, and in fact, one of the best at knowing how to handle and to advance that kind of operation is Vladimir Putin and his role as a significant individual inside of the powerful and dangerous KGB, if you will, as well as we must give credit to the CIA and the other secret organizations that were a part of the great battle of the Cold War and et cetera. But when you talk about regime change, it's a two-way street. We in the United States of America have been very blessed that in the couple of occasions where we've had a regime change, if you will, that the institutions of democracy in the United States of America were still strong enough that they were able to move ahead, even though, quote-unquote, the leader of the regime had been, quote-unquote, removed. And we certainly are talking about John F. Kennedy, even in the case of his brother, if you will. Just as we in the African American had to make the necessary adjustments, if you will, the necessary changes, though we certainly have suffered significant damage with the loss of so many powerful African American voices, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King Jr., Medgar Evers, and others, that we understand maybe better than people give us credit for within the United States and around the world, if you will, when people start talking recklessly. And see, that is reckless. That is very careless, if you will. You have a lot of fragile minds in this country as we speak today. Oh, yes, there's the extreme right, if you will, who maintain that they have the strength, if you will, the capabilities and the control of certain institutions to eliminate the people of color and et cetera. But there are people who are of the same mindset about assassinations as it pertains to the white order, if you know what I mean. And so it's a dangerous game. And I think, unfortunately, yesterday the Trump administration rolled the dice. Now, let's go to the opiate situation, and keep in mind that does not mean that North Korea and the crisis there, as well as the crisis with Iran, if you will, and the possibility of serious fallout with Russia and China has evaporated and has gone away, if you will. And we must look very closely at a couple of areas that can so inflame the nation that we will see situations in which there will be an enacting of new laws, rules, and regulations which will further disenfranchise the sons and daughters of the African. The opiate situation as one. It has always been, in the last 50 years, the issue of drugs that have allowed the system, as we used to like to say, to take questionable measures against the constitutional and civil rights of the African American, if you will. Jeff Sessions, a son of the South, if you will, a man closely tied to the Ku Klux Klan and other extreme organizations in the South in the 1960s and early 70s, is now Attorney General. As we said just minutes ago, for effect and for purpose, that he's doing everything he possibly can to get back on the good side of Big Daddy. The the President of the United States, Donald Trump. And it is interesting, a conversation that was had when he visited the city of Minneapolis just a couple of weeks ago to participate in an activity involving our county attorney, our sheriff, and others who are great sympathizers and supporters of Donald Trump and his philosophy, and particularly his program, his law enforcement program to deal with the Negro problem. See, one of the things that always unfortunately happens in this country is the one permanent scapegoat that will always be present, that is even within the DNA of too many in white America, is the anti-black proposition, if you will. The opiate, that will be the first step, as we have been reporting for the last 5 months. Plan that is in place to be activated in places like Chicago and other large metropolitan areas, Atlanta. Only problem they're having with Atlanta is that Atlanta is, at least at the level within the corporate boundaries of Atlanta, is strongly meshed together, linked together with black political power, that it would be difficult to do in Atlanta what they're getting ready to do in Chicago. Now, our own beloved Minneapolis and St. Paul, we are at a serious disadvantage based on just our numbers, if you will. The African-American population here are small. Our numbers are maybe 25,000, maybe. We never can get an accurate count. There are a lot of immigrants, quote-unquote, who have come in. There are also a lot of white immigrants, by the way, particularly Russians, who have been quieted coming into Minnesota, many through the port of Duluth in northern Minnesota. No one talks about that. Many of them with espionage background and military background, who have no understanding whatsoever of the rights of people of color, particularly the African-American persuasion and et cetera, to even exist on the face of this earth, if you will. In fact, for those that like to study the Russian philosophy, take a look at Russia's relationship with those Asian republics that were at one time a part of the old Soviet Union. Take a look at how they handled those populations of color, except there was one particular feature that allowed for those populations in those nations, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, places like that, because it was those quote-unquote people of the quote-unquote Mongol philosophy and Mongol quote-unquote discipline that helped save the Soviet Union during the Second World War. If it had not been for those hardened nomads, if you will, those hardened soldiers who were a part of the Soviet military to rush to the aid of the Russian troops on the Western Front, if you will, and saving Stalingrad. The enemy at the gates of Moscow, St. Petersburg, and et cetera, he would have possibly been a different world that we lived in. All of this is relevant to another feature that is being discussed within Asia, particularly China, North Korea, I clearly understand. Even countries like Vietnam understand. They have felt the wrath. We have talked about it, and in fact, we have tried to lure some of the so-called educators, if you will, academicians, and et cetera. It's just as we said earlier on this program, the loss of life that will take place if there is a conflict on the Korean Peninsula. We also wonder why there is so little discussion about the future relationship with other nations of color that periodically come up but are not given the same weight, if you will, that is faces relationship with Europe, as an example. Now, the reason we touch on this, the reason that we touch on this particular situation, is that in listening to the shortwave broadcast coming from North Korea and China. Oh, by the way, the North Koreans have a lovely couple of English-speaking commentators and announcers. But one of the things that the North Koreans have said, and we find it very interesting that they are joining something we've been saying since the conflict in Yugoslavia a decade ago, with the exception of the short, very short conflict with Serbia over a decade, well, actually 15 years ago, that this country has only fought and killed people of color since the end of the Second World War. Korea, in Central America, if you will, the brutal attack on Panama, the regime change in Grenada, if you will, including the assassination of Prime Minister Bishop, if you will, for those of you that know your history of the Caribbean and et cetera. The United States' activities in both Afghanistan and Iraq, if you will. Certainly we all remember the conflict in Vietnam, if you will, the bombing and poisoning, the use of chemical warfare in Cambodia and Laos, if you will, and certainly inside of Vietnam itself. It is something that scholars do not talk about in this country, and I think that it represents cowardice, if you will. And that is that we are a nation, the United States of America, which has a great amalgamation and et cetera, that we are very comfortable killing by the hundreds of thousands of people of color, our involvement in places like Africa, if you will. Oh, there's much more going on as it pertains to the African command. And there are many of you out there in the international audience that knows that. The African command put in place to deal with, quote-unquote, the continued potential growth population-wise of the black populations, particularly of those countries south, quote-unquote, of the Sahara, if you will. The tolerating of black South Africa, but of course that could happen because unfortunately black South Africa, upon gaining its independence, made a mistake of relinquishing its nuclear capabilities and its nuclear weapons, which were being stockpiled. Though the apartheid government, the Afrikaan, if you will, finally were convinced by scientists and et cetera that there could not be strategic use of nuclear weapons inside of a country the size of South Africa without, in fact, contaminating of that country so that the significant wealth, mineral wealth and et cetera, that exists within South Africa and those countries north of South Africa could be utilized for industrial America. And by the way, take note for those of you that are on top of your game, if you will, on your computers, take note of the interesting discussion that came up today that President Trump, there he is again, angry at his Joint Chiefs of Staff and his military leaders because they are not, quote-unquote, winning the conflict in Afghanistan because he and his friends on Wall Street have been patiently waiting for the significant mineral wealth of Afghanistan. See, they always play a game with you by making it appear that Afghanistan is just basically a country that grows nothing but poppies, if you will, for heroin and et cetera. No, 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 no. There is a tremendous amount of wealth in, quote-unquote, minerals and et cetera inside of Afghanistan, and previous Afghani governments have known for a long time that that really was what it was all about. The Russians let the cat out of the bag back in the 70s when they made the mistake of going into Afghanistan and were drawn into a bloody conflict, if you will. Well, Donald Trump made a terrible error today in the United States of America as by letting the cat out of the bag because there has never previously been a real discussion other than inside of the intelligence community and those special, quote-unquote, think tanks that are all, quote-unquote, white Christians about the mineral wealth inside of Afghanistan. And what has happened that was revealed today, by accident,
And again, the president not understanding how government really works let the cat out of the bag because he's angry. And what happened, you know, with all the leakers that you have in the Trump administration, within the Beltway and outside of the Beltway and et cetera, took full advantage, just like they took full advantage of who it was that was the leaker on Air Force One, who was clearly present when the President of the United States committed, quote-unquote, obstruction by changing the narrative of the little meeting that his little son, Donald Jr., had with regards to some folks to talk about adoptions. I mean, come on, man. But back to Afghanistan. President Donald Trump was not supposed to let that information out. That was very restricted information, if you will, very confidential, if you will, under the most significant cloak of information that is classified. It's the reflection that is always used. I was shocked as a historian and as one who has followed the activities for many, many years. I was shocked that his handlers, but if they weren't able to stop him as he was, you know, screaming and hollering, because he had already told the generals, McMasters and them, that he expected a swift, decisive action. In fact, somebody had actually convinced this man that the Afghans, who had been tough warriors and fighting for over 1,000 years as it pertains to protecting Afghanistan, that when he dropped the, you remember the sensational statement that this man made when they dropped a bomb that actually had been over there since the Obama administration? President Obama just didn't buy into the fact that this massive bomb, which is just a level below a nuclear bomb, was in some way or another going to put fear into, quote-unquote, Afghani fighters and et cetera, as well as others from outside of Afghanistan that had joined them. But anyways, after Donald Trump gave the authorization to the Joint Chiefs to drop the mother of all bombs, remember that? The mother of all bombs, dummy, is a nuclear bomb, if you will. That is the mother of all bombs. And too many of them get dropped at the same time, we will be nothing more than a flash of light that is now extinguished, quote-unquote, in the solar system. But this man actually believed that that bomb being dropped in the area of Bora Bora, you remember Bora Bora, where allegedly they had Osama bin Laden hemmed up. This was 5 years before they finally caught up with him and killed him, assassinated him, if you will. You remember that they talked about Bora Bora? Well, they had no idea of the complexity, because the Annies had been using Bora Bora for 300 years. There were caves and tunnels and a scepter that were just beyond imagination. But Trump had, in fact, one of the people that initially had put this on his mind was the very disgraced former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Some way or another, Flynn had also convinced him before his departure that this mother of all bomb, which, it, as we said, had been sitting at an air base in Afghanistan for about 4 years, would get the job done, and the little ignorant Afghani people would panic and run about the countryside and et cetera. Well, it didn't do any of that, if you will. And so the president has been saying in closed circles that he is expecting that Afghanistan's conflict should have already ended so that he could have that as a affirmative, as a positive for his regime and his mission and et cetera, if you will. The generals themselves, though they had intelligence data, if you will, in fact, as we are talking to you right now, we are looking at that issued and came from the Russians, if you will, talking in terms of some of the exploits of Donald Trump when he was Citizen Trump and was making his trips to Russia, even beyond the Miss Universe pageant and things like that. It's an interesting report for those of you. I don't think you're going to be able to get it on your computer anymore. They had it classified, PR to declassify, if you will. But for those of you that have this report, if you will, that talks about the actions and the activities that were going on, if you will, on the many occasions that Russia was visited and discussions and arrangements were going on, including significant loans and et cetera, to keep the Trump empire afloat, if you will. For those of you that take the time to do it, do it. Take a look at the report that was issued. They tried to discredit the former British intelligence agent by indicating that things he said weren't true. You have to do some deep research. You have to be able to know how to access even information that is supposedly classified, if you will. Can't share it with you, sorry about that. But it always pays to have sources, if you will, around the world, from the Far East to the Middle East, the Persian Gulf. Be surprised sometimes what you can get your hands on. But we now go back to the statement about the mineral wealth of Afghanistan and the fact that American companies, just as Secretary of State Tillerson, the real reason he was brought in was to finalize that multi-trillion dollar oil deal that was cut. In fact, President Trump got a nice cut of that a long time ago, because there never was the kind of examination of the Secretary of State that there should have been with regards to when did he really begin a series of business arrangements with at that time, Citizen Trump, if you will, and just what was Mr. Trump's, now President Trump's, involvement in the negotiations of the Trans-Siberian, quote-unquote, oil pipeline, and just how much of a profit that would take place for ExxonMobil and et cetera, but also into the pockets. You see, all that kind of unraveled today. Now, they're working as we speak on this program tonight. They are working, you know, frantically to get this thing, this genie, back in the bottle, because the president was not supposed to talk about the plans for Afghanistan. Not for freeing the Afghani people and bringing order and transparency and peace and et cetera to Afghanistan. No, it was about the riches that are in the mountains of Afghanistan that nation holds, and the kind of deals that had been cut, just like the arrangement made for the Trans-Siberian oil pipeline and oil deals and the exploration and bringing out all those big, large oil fields that are in that part of the world. Putin is angry because they have made it, and this actually began to happen a decade ago, significant rewards, if you will, to Mr. Trump and others, such as also the Secretary of State Tillerson, with regards to how the wealth of the world could really be split up. Now, one of the countries that picked up on it early on and are doing their own thing, in fact, they and the Russians are not too happy with each other with regards to some things that are happening in Central Asia, if you will. But the Chinese, being the masters, quote-unquote, of reflection, if you will, in the understanding about trade and such things as that, you know, for those of you that doubt what we're saying, go back, take a look at the history of Marco Polo and what he discovered as he came from the West to the East, if you will. But the president was not supposed to reveal these secret negotiations, anticipations, and the significant number of loans at any number of banks. That's why everyone laughs when about sanctions against North Korea and sanctions against Iran and et cetera, because far too many individuals know about what has really been going on in regards to
the economics, if you will. And Vladimir Putin really, in many respects, is a genius with regards to understanding the economic portfolio. If you ever notice, American, and well, let me put it like this, Western commentators, journalists, analysts, and et cetera, really always stay away from how well-schooled Vladimir Putin is in regards to economics and et cetera, because really, in many regards, many experts admit that he did a hell of a job in bringing back Russia, Mother Russia, from the brink of economic collapse after the quote-unquote end of the so-called Cold War. For those of you that are really interested, really want to see what's going on, take a look. Pull out your map. Take a look at Mother Russia, if you will. And then think in terms of that oil way up there in the Trans-Siberian, if you will. And think about what China is doing now in her relationship with Kazakhstan and Bhutan and et cetera. And the rush to be able to get a clear route for all of that oil and et cetera. It's one of the reasons that our good friends in Saudi Arabia, and by the way, we have a congressman here who has just an excellent relationship with the Saudis. In fact, in some regards, he has a better relationship with the Saudis than he does with his own black constituency in the 5th Congressional District. But then that's another reflection, because there is a heck of a game that is going on. And so as we move into the last 8 minutes of tonight's program, we want to move back to the Korean Peninsula. I found it rather amusing a couple of days ago when the announcement was made that two American B-1 bombers, or super bombers, flew over, and they said it like this. They said the Korean Peninsula. And the subliminal message that they were trying to deliver was that the United States and the Korean and Japanese fighters that were accompanying the two B-1 bombers had actually flown over North Korea. I mean, people are that shallow. For those of you that have your computers, if you have your maps in front of you, I know that you're looking very closely at that part of the world that we're talking about. And then you go back, and for those of you that know how to do it, go back and take a look at the fiscal reports by ExxonMobil, particularly under now Secretary of State Tillerson. And if you really can do your research and really get down on the game, if you will, take a look at some of those line items and the kind of monies that were, quote-unquote, being spent and et cetera. Now, you won't get that kind of same access to Mother Russia, the Russian Federation, and et cetera. The ball game is different there. The laws are different. The culture is different. But for those of you that really know how to go into the systems, if you will, take a look at some of the transactions by holding companies and front companies that were under the custody and control of a man by the name of Donald Trump about 12 to 13 to 15 years ago. And if you know how to draw up the name of the banks that have all of these loans, if you will, and if you can trace that and go back into the emergence of capitalism in Mother Russia 12 to 13 to 14 years ago, if you really know how to call that information up, then you'll be able to begin to put together the tale of two nations, not to be confused with the tale of two cities. And then you will begin to get a better feel for why there is such frustration, consternation, and feuding, because you really have some powerful segments and sectors involved. And there are some who maintain that Donald Trump was never considered to be a primetime player. Now, these are the big money boys. These are the boys and girls who really have, quote-unquote, billions and billions and billions of dollars, if you will. In fact, why don't you do this? For those of you that are listening and et cetera, go back and take a look at the most recent, when I say most recent edition of Forbes magazine. And that particular
copy that talked in terms of the richest people in the world, and really analyze it. Take a close look at it. Take a close look, particularly in the category of those worth $15-25 billion, if you will. Take a look at some of their corporations, if you will. Take a look and do a little bit more reading on ExxonMobil and go a little bit more into the history of Rex Tillerson, if you will. Now, this is a man, in closing, that has been very, very quiet. Now, he, on the surface, seems to be about the business of his office of responsibility, though he does take a lot of time to take naps and et cetera. But he's been doing a lot of traveling. In fact, in some regards, his itinerary is not very well known or made known to the American public in general. Reason for that, if you will. Keep your eye on the retaliation that is going on. Vladimir Putin is a man who knows how to play a game. He's told the United States 755 of your employees and et cetera must get out of my country and get out of your embassies and et cetera by September 1st. See, it's interesting. First thing that our folks said here in the United States, well, those are basically all Russian citizens, are they? Is that right? At four different Pacific postings throughout the Soviet Union, starting with Moscow? I don't think so, if you will. There is something going on, and Vladimir Putin has said in the clearest possible terms, it's kind of like, you know, one of those television programs, if you will, you know, maybe like The Apprentice. Maybe Vladimir Putin has his own private apprentice program. And one of the things that he is saying, need my money, make my money right, or there is going to be problems. What could he be talking about? What could Vladimir Putin and oligarchs, if you will, and Russian quote-unquote bankers and financiers and et cetera, what could they be actually talking about, if you will? And what are the Chinese thinking as they watch quote-unquote the smoke that is coming from the industrial capitals and financial capitals of the United States of America? I don't know. I'm a black person, if you will. You know, we black folks are considered to have no understanding whatsoever of the complexity, if you will, of the working, if you will, of the analysis of how the real people of the world go about their business. Well, that's not quite true. As we said before, go back, take a look at the most recent edition of Forbes magazine, The World's Billionaires, and et cetera. And if you spend enough time at your computer, and if you have enough insight into history, if you remember enough about what it was that you have been listening to, if you've been listening, if you will, maybe you'll begin to figure it out. But Donald Trump made a hell of a mistake yesterday in talking in terms of the real purpose of being concerned about Afghanistan. How much wealth is inside of Afghanistan, a place where American military presence has been now going on almost 15 years, if you will. That's a long time, but more importantly, a lot of young American lives have been lost. Oh, by the way, two more Americans were killed yesterday in Afghanistan, in what was supposedly a training exercise with NATO forces. Now, NATO only has a couple of nations that are in Afghanistan that are really doing anything militarily. Probably the most significant are the British, if you will, and the United States, to a lesser degree, the French, if you will. The Belgians have a little presence, but think about the increase that Donald Trump has indicated that militarily that he wants committed to Afghanistan so can be ended. And then if you know what you're doing, you take a look at what kind of investments and purchases has young Mr. Trump and his quote-unquote brother-in-law been making in the name of their business transactions. You know, contrary to what people try to make you believe, not everything that they are dealing with, quote-unquote, is about dresses and suits and things like that. So we appreciate you being with us this evening. We hope the broadcast got through. We did notice some background noise and et cetera, probably our friends at the NSA. But bottom line, the situation with North Korea is extremely serious, and it becomes more serious each and every day. And we just have to hope that we are in the best situation possible, the sons and daughters of America's military personnel. If we fail them, we fail ourselves. And if those two failures take place, we have failed the United States of America. And we should not be as comfortable as we seem to want to be told that we are in this very troubled time, facing all of the world, but also facing the United States of America. It is not something that is healthy, my friends. It is something that we need to be concerned with, we need to be worried about. Again, come into your homes and to dialogue with you, and we will be back next week. Again, I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Ron and Don program. Good evening.